I'm telling the truth, and I don't know. He told me he took it from Mrs. Townsend's office.
Helen Townsend? Lena nodded. Sean's wife? Your head teacher?
But why would she have the bracelet? I don't understand.
Neither do I, she said quietly.
Not really.
I made tea, and we sat together at the kitchen table, sipping our drinks in silence. I held Nell's bracelet in my hand. Lena sat loose-limbed, her head bowed, visibly sagging in front of me. I reached out and grazed her fingers with my own.
You're exhausted, I said. You should go to bed.
She nodded, looking up at me with hooded eyes.
Will you come up with me, please? I don't want to be by myself.
I followed her up the stairs and into your room, not her own. She clambered onto your bed and lay her head on the pillow, patting the space next to her.
When we first moved here, she said, I couldn't sleep by myself.
All the noises, I asked, clambering up next to her and covering us with your coat. She nodded.
All the creaking and the moaning.
And all your mother's scary stories.
Exactly. I used to come in here and sleep next to Mum all the time.
There was a lump in my throat, a pebble. I couldn't swallow. I used to do that with my mum, too. She fell asleep. I stayed at her side, looking down at her face, which in repose was yours exactly. I wanted to touch her, to stroke her hair, to do something motherly, but I didn't want to wake her or alarm her or do something wrong. I have no idea how to be a mother. I've never taken care of a child in my entire life. I wished that you would speak, that you would tell me what to do, what to feel. As she lay beside me, I think I did feel tenderness, but I felt it for you and for our mother, and the second her green eyes flicked open and fixed on mine, I shivered.
Why are you always watching me like that? She whispered, half smiling. It's really weird.
I'm sorry, I said, and rolled onto my back. She slipped her fingers between mine.
It's okay, she said. Weird's okay. Weird can be good.
We lay there, side by side, our fingers interlaced. I listened to her breathing slow, then quicken, and then slow once again.
You know what I don't understand, she whispered, is why you hated her so much.
I didn't.
She didn't understand either.
I know, I said. I know she didn't.
You're crying, she whispered, reaching over to touch my face.
She brushed the tears from my cheek. I told her. All the things I should have told you, I told them to your daughter instead. I told her how I'd let you down, how I'd believed the worst of you, how I'd allowed myself to blame you.
But why didn't you just tell her? Why didn't you tell her what really happened?
It was complicated, I said, and I felt her stiffen beside me.
Complicated how? How complicated could it be?
Our mother was dying. Our parents were in a terrible way, and I didn't want to do anything to make it worse.
But he raped you, she said. He should have gone to prison.
I didn't see it that way. I was very young. I was younger than you are, and I don't just mean in years, although I was that too. But I was naive, completely inexperienced. I was clueless. We didn't talk about consent in the way you girls do now. I thought...
You thought what he did was okay?
No, but I don't think I saw it for what it was, what it really was. I thought rape was something a bad man did to you, a man who jumped out at you in an alleyway in the dead of night, a man who held a knife to your throat. I didn't think boys did it, not schoolboys like Robbie, not good-looking boys, the ones who go out with the prettiest girl in town. I didn't think they did it to you in your own living room. I didn't think they talked to you about it afterwards and asked you if you'd had a good time. I just thought I must have done something wrong, that I hadn't made it clear enough that I didn't want it.
Lena was silent for a while, but when she spoke again, her voice was higher, more insistent.
Okay, maybe you didn't want to say anything at the time, but what about later? Why didn't you explain it to her later on?
Because I misunderstood her, I said. I misjudged her completely. I thought that she knew what had happened that night.
You thought that she knew and did nothing? How could you think that of her?
How could I explain that? That I pieced together your words, the words you said to me that night, and the words you said to me later. Wasn't there some part of you that liked it? And I told myself a story about you that had made sense to me, that allowed me to get on with my life without ever having to face what really happened.
I thought that she chose to protect him, I whispered. I thought she chose him over me. I couldn't blame him, because I couldn't even think about him. If I'd have blamed him and thought about him, I'd have made it real. So I thought about Nell instead.
Lena's voice grew cold.
I don't understand you. I don't understand people like you, who always choose to blame the woman. If there's two people doing something wrong and one of them's a girl, it's got to be her fault, right? No, Lena, it's not like that. It isn't. Yes, it is. It's like when someone has an affair. Why does the wife always hate the other woman? Why doesn't she hate her husband? He's the one who's betrayed her. He's the one who swore to love her and keep her and whatever forever and ever. Why isn't he the one who gets shoved off a fucking cliff?
Tuesday, the 25th of August. Erin. I left the cottage early, running upriver. I wanted to get away from Beckford, to clear my head. But though the air had been rinsed clean by rain, and the sky was a perfect pale blue, the fog in my head got darker, murkier. Nothing about this place makes sense. By the time Sean and I left Jules and Lena at the mill house yesterday, I'd worked myself up into a total state, and I was so pissed off at him, I just came out with it right there in the car. What exactly was going on with you and Nell Abbott? He slammed his foot on the brake so hard I thought I'd go through the windscreen. We'd stopped in the middle of the lane, but Sean didn't seem to care.
What did you say?
Do you want to pull over? I asked, checking the rearview mirror, but he didn't. I felt like an idiot for blurting it out like that, not leading up to it, not testing the water at all.
Are you questioning my integrity?
There was a look on his face I hadn't seen before, a hardness I hadn't yet come up against.
Well, are you?
It was suggested to me, I said, keeping my voice even. Hinted at.
Hinted?
He sounded incredulous. A car behind us hooted and Sean put his foot back on the accelerator.
Someone hinted at something, did they? And you thought it would be appropriate to question me about it?
Sean, We'd reached the car park outside the church. He pulled over, leaned across me and opened the passenger door.
Have you seen my service record, Erin?
He asked.
Because I've seen yours.
Sir, I didn't mean to offend you, but
get out of the car.
I barely had time to close the door behind me before he accelerated away. I was out of puff by the time I'd climbed the hill north of the cottage. I stopped at the summit for a breather. It was still early, barely 7 o'clock. The entire valley was mine. Perfectly, peacefully mine. I stretched out my legs and prepared myself for the descent. I felt I needed to sprint, to fly, to exhaust myself. Wasn't that the way to find clarity? Sean had reacted like a guilty man. Or like an offended man. A man who thought his integrity was being questioned without evidence. I picked up the pace. When he'd sneered at me about our respective records, he had a point. His is impeccable. I narrowly avoided getting sacked for sleeping with a younger colleague. I was sprinting now, going hell for leather down the hill, my eyes trained on the path, the gorse at the side of my vision a blur. He has an impressive arrest record. He is highly respected amongst his colleagues. He is, as Louis said, a good man. My right foot caught on a rock in the path and I went flying. I lay in the dust, fighting for breath. The wind knocked clean out of me. Sean Townsend is a good man. There are a lot of them about. My father was a good man. He was a respected officer. Didn't stop him beating the shit out of me and my brothers when he lost his temper, but still. When my mother complained to one of his colleagues after he broke my youngest brother's nose, his colleague said, "There's a thin blue line, love, and I'm afraid you just don't cross it." I hauled myself up, dusting the dirt off me. I could say nothing. I could stay on the right side of the thin blue line. I could ignore Louise's hints and intimations. I could ignore Sean's possible personal connection to Nell Abbott. But if I did that, I'd be ignoring the fact that where there is sex, there is motive. He had a motive to get rid of Nell. And his wife did too. I thought about her face the day I spoke to her at the school, the way she spoke about Nell, about Lena. What was it she despised? Her insistent, tiresome expression of sexual availability. I reached the bottom of the slope and skirted around the gorse. The cottage was just a couple of hundred yards away, and I could see that there was someone outside. A figure stout and stooped in a dark coat. Not Patrick, and not Sean. As I got closer, I realised it was the old goth, the psychic, mad as a hatter, Nikki Sage. She was leaning against the wall of the cottage, her face puce. She looked like she might be on the verge of a heart attack. "Mrs. Sage," I called out. "Are you all right?" She looked up at me, breathing heavily, and pushed her floppy velvet hat further up her brow.
"I'm fine," she said. "Although it's been a while since I've walked this far." She looked me up and down. "You look like you've been playing in the muck."
"Oh, yes," I said, doing an ineffectual job of brushing the remaining dirt off me. "Had a bit of a tumble." She nodded. As she straightened up, I could hear the wheeze as she breathed. "Would you like to come in and sit down?"
"In there?"
She jerked her head back towards the cottage.
"Not likely."
She took a few steps away from the front door.
"Do you know what happened in there? Do you know what Anne Ward did?"
"She murdered her husband," I replied. "And then she drowned herself, just out there in the river." Nikki shrugged, waddling off towards the riverbank. I followed her.
"More of an exorcism than a murder, if you ask me. She was getting rid of whatever evil spirit had taken hold of that man. It left him, but it didn't leave that place, did it? You have trouble sleeping there?"
"Well, I..."
"Not surprised. Not surprised at all. I could have told you that. Not that you'd have listened. The place is full of evil. Why do you think Townsend keeps it as his own? Looks after it like it's his special place?"
"I've no idea," I said. "I thought he used it as a fishing cabin."
"Fishing!"
she exclaimed, as though she'd never heard anything quite so ridiculous in her entire life.
"Fishing!"
"Well, I have actually seen him out here fishing, so..." Nikki harrumphed, dismissing the idea with a wave of her hand. We were at the water's edge, toe to heel and heel to toe. Nikki was working her swollen, mottled feet out of her slip-on shoes. She put a toe in the water and gave a satisfied chuckle.
The water's cold up here, isn't it?
Clean. Standing ankle-deep in the river, she asked,
Have you been to see him? Townsend? Have you asked him about his wife?
You mean Helen?
She turned to look at me, her expression contemptuous.
Sean's wife? That Helen, with her face like a slapped arse. What's she got to do with anything? She's about as interesting as paint drying on a damp day. No, the one you should be interested in is Patrick's wife, Lauren.
Lauren? Lauren who died 30 years ago?
Yes, Lauren who died 30 years ago. You think the dead don't matter? You think the dead don't speak? You should hear the things they have to say.
She shuffled a little further into the river, bending down to soak her hands.
This is it. This is where Annie came to wash her hands just like this. See? Only she kept going.
I was losing interest. I need to go, Nikki. I need to take a shower and get on with some work. It was good talking to you, I said, turning to leave her. I was halfway back to the cottage when I heard her call out.
You think the dead don't speak? You should listen. You might hear something. It's Lauren you're looking for. She's the one who started all this.
I left her at the river. My plan was to get to Sean early. I thought if I showed up at his place, picked him up and drove him to the station, I'd have him captive for at least 15 minutes. He wouldn't be able to get away from me or throw me out of the car. It was better than confronting him at the station, where there would be other people around. It's not far from the cottage to the Townsend's place. Along the river it's probably about 3 miles, but there's no direct road. You have to drive all the way into the town and then back out again, so it was after 8 a.m. by the time I got there. I was too late. There were no cars in the courtyard. He'd already left. The sensible thing, I knew, would be to turn the car around and head for the office. But I had Nikki's voice in my head, and Louise's too. And I thought I'd just see, on the off chance, whether Helen was around.
She wasn't.
I knocked on the door a few times and there was no reply. I was heading back to my car when I thought I might as well try Patrick Townsend's place next door. No answer there either. I peered through the front window but couldn't see much, just a dark and seemingly empty room. I went back to the front door and knocked again. Nothing. But when I tried the handle, the door swung open, and that seemed as good as an invitation. Hello? I called out. Mr. Townsend? Hello? There was no answer. I walked into the living room, a Spartan space with dark wooden floors and bare walls. The only concession to decoration was a selection of framed photographs on the mantelpiece. Patrick Townsend in uniform, first army, then police, and a number of pictures of Sean as a child, and then a teenager, smiling stiffly at the camera. The same pose and the same expression in each one. There was a photograph of Sean and Helen on their wedding day too, standing in front of the church in Beckford. Sean looked young, handsome, and unhappy. Helen looked much the same as she does today, a bit thinner, perhaps. She looked happier, though, smiling shyly at the camera in spite of her ugly dress. Over on a wooden sideboard in front of the window was another set of frames. These ones containing certificates, commendations, qualifications, a monument to the achievements of father and son. There were no pictures, as far as I could see, of Sean's mother. I left the living room and called out again, "Mr. Townsend!" My voice echoed back to me in the hallway. The whole place felt abandoned, and yet it was spotlessly clean, not a speck of dust on the skirting boards or the banister. I walked up the stairs and onto the landing. There were two bedrooms there, side by side, as sparsely furnished as the living room downstairs, but lived in. Both of them, by the looks of things. In the main bedroom, with its large window looking down the valley to the river, were Patrick's things, polished black shoes by the wall, his suits hanging in the wardrobe. Next door, beside a neatly made single bed, was a chair with a suit jacket hanging over it, which I recognised as the one Helen wore when I interviewed her at the school. And in the wardrobe were more of her clothes, black and grey and navy and shapeless. My phone beeped, deafeningly loud in the funeral parlour silence of that house. I had a voicemail, a missed call. It was Jules. "Dear Smorgon," she was saying, her voice solemn, "I need to talk to you. It's quite urgent. I'm coming in to see you. I need to talk to you alone. I'll see you at the station." I slipped the phone back into my pocket. I went back into Patrick's room and took another quick look around, at the books on the shelves, in the drawer next to the bed. There were photographs in there, too, old ones, of Sean and Helen together, fishing at the river near the cottage, Sean and Helen leaning proudly against a new car, Helen standing in front of the school, looking at once happy and embarrassed, Helen out in the courtyard, cradling a cat in her arms, Helen, Helen, Helen. I heard a noise, a click. The sound of a latch lifting, and then a creak of floorboards. I put the photographs back hastily and shut the drawer, then moved as quietly as I could out onto the landing. Then I froze. Helen was standing at the bottom of the stairs, looking up at me. She had a paring knife in her left hand, and was gripping its blade so tightly that blood was dripping onto the floor.
Helen had no idea why Erin Morgan was wandering about Patrick's house as though she owned it, but for the moment she was more concerned with the blood on the floor. Patrick liked a clean house. She fetched a cloth from the kitchen and began to wipe it up, only for more to spill from the deep cut across her palm. "I was chopping onions," she said to the detective by way of explanation. "You startled me." This wasn't exactly true, because she'd stopped chopping onions when she'd seen the car pull up. With the knife in her hand, she'd stood stock still while Erin knocked, and then had watched her wander over to Patrick's place. She knew that he was out, so she'd assumed the detective would just leave. But then she remembered that when she'd left that morning, she hadn't locked the front door. So, knife still in hand, she walked across the courtyard to check. "It's quite deep," Erin said. "You need to clean and bandage that properly." Erin had come downstairs and was standing over Helen, watching her wipe the floor. Standing there in Patrick's house as though she had every right to be there. "He'll be livid if he sees this," Helen said. "He likes a clean house. Always has." "And you keep house for him, do you?" Helen gave Erin a sharp look. "I help out. He does most things himself, but he's getting on. And he likes things to be just so. His late wife," she said, looking up at Erin, "was a slattern. His word, an old-fashioned word. You're not allowed to say slut any longer, are you? It's politically incorrect." She stood up, facing Erin, holding the bloody cloth in front of her, The pane in her hand felt hot and bright, like a burn almost, with the same cauterizing effect. She was no longer sure who to be afraid of, or what exactly to feel guilty for, but she felt that she ought to keep Erin here to find out what she wanted. To detain her for a while, hopefully until Patrick got back, because she was sure that he'd want to talk to her. Helen wiped the knife handle with the cloth. "Would you like a cup of tea, Detective?" she asked. "Lovely," Erin replied, her cheery smile fading as she watched Helen lock the front door and slip the key into her pocket before continuing on into the kitchen. "Mrs. Townsend?" Erin started. "Do you take sugar?" Helen interrupted. The way to deal with situations like this was to throw the other person off their game. Helen knew this from years of public sector politics. Don't do what people expect you to do. It puts them on the back foot right away, and, if nothing else, it buys you time. So instead of being angry, outraged that this woman had come into their home without permission, Helen was polite. "Have you found him?" she asked Erin as she handed her the mug of tea. "Mark Henderson? Has he turned up yet?" "No," Erin replied. "Not yet." "His car left on the cliff and no sign of him anywhere," she sighed. "A suicide can be an admission of guilt, can't it? It's certainly going to look that way. What a mess." Erin nodded. She was nervous, Helen could tell. She kept glancing back at the door, fiddling around in her pocket. "It'll be terrible for the school, for our reputation. The reputation of this entire place, tarnished again." "Is that why you dislike Nell Abbott so much?" Erin asked. "Because she tarnished the reputation of Beckford with her work?" Helen frowned. "Well, it's one of the reasons. She was a bad parent, as I told you. She was disrespectful to me and to the traditions and rules of the school." "Was she a slut?" Erin asked. Helen laughed in surprise. "I beg your pardon?" "I was just wondering if, to use your politically incorrect term, you thought Nell Abbott was a slut. I've heard she had affairs with some of the men in town." "I don't know anything about that," Helen said, but her face was hot and she felt that she had lost the upper hand. She got to her feet, crossed over to the counter and retrieved her paring knife. Standing at the sink, she washed her blood from its blade. "I don't profess to know anything about Nell Abbott's private life," she said quietly. She could feel the detective's eyes on her, watching her face, her hands. She could feel her blush spread to her neck, to her chest, her body betraying her. She tried to keep her voice light. "Though I'd hardly be surprised if she were promiscuous. She was an attention seeker." She wanted this conversation to end. She wanted the detective to leave their home. She wanted Sean to be there, and Patrick. She had an urge to lay everything on the table, to confess to her own sins and demand they confess to theirs. Mistakes had been made, admittedly, but the Townsends were a good family. They were good people. They had nothing to fear. She turned to face the detective, her chin raised, and with as haughty an expression as she could muster. But her hands were trembling so badly she thought she might drop the knife. Surely she had nothing to fear.
Jules. I left Lena tucked up in her mother's bed in the morning, still sound asleep. I wrote her a note saying I'd meet her at the police station at 11 for her to give her statement. There were things I needed to do first, conversations best had between adults. I had to think like a parent now, like a mother. I had to protect her, to keep her from any further harm. I drove to the station, stopping halfway to ring Erin to warn her I'd be coming in. I wanted to make sure that it was Erin I spoke to, and I had to make sure that we could speak alone.
"Why isn't he the one who gets shoved off a fucking cliff?"
Lena had been talking about Sean Townsend last night. It had all come out. How Sean had fallen in love with Nell, and, Lena thought, Nell a bit in love with Sean. It had ended a while back. Nell had said things had run their course, although Lena didn't quite believe her. In any case, Helen must have found out. She must have taken revenge. Then it was my turn to be outraged. Why hadn't Lena said anything before? He was in charge of the investigation into Nell's death. It was completely inappropriate. He loved her, Lena said. Doesn't that make him a good person that he tried to find out what happened to her? But Lena, don't you see? He's a good person, Julia. How could I say anything? It would have got him into trouble, and he doesn't deserve that. He's a good man. Erin didn't answer her phone, so I left a message and drove on to the station. I parked outside and called again, but again there was no answer, so I decided to wait for her. Half an hour went by, and I decided to go in anyway. If Sean was there, I'd make an excuse. I'd pretend I thought that Lena's statement had been scheduled for 9, not 11. I'd think of something. As it turned out, he wasn't there. Neither of them was. The man on the desk told me D.I. Townsend was in Newcastle for the day, and that he wasn't entirely sure of the whereabouts of D.S. Morgan, but he had no doubt she'd be in any minute. I went back to my car. I took your bracelet out of my pocket. I'd put it into a plastic bag to protect it, to protect whatever was on it. The chances of there being a fingerprint or some DNA trapped within its links were slim, but slim was something. Slim was a possibility. Slim was a shot at an answer. Nicky said you were dead because you found out something about Patrick Townsend. Lena said you were dead because you fell in love with Sean, and he with you, and Helen Townsend, jealous, vengeful Helen, would not stand for that. No matter which way I turned, I saw Townsend's. Metaphorically. Literally, I saw Nicky Sage looming large in the rearview mirror. She was shuffling across the car park, achingly slowly, her face pink under a big floppy hat. She reached the back of my car and leaned against it, and I could hear her labored breathing through the open window. Nicky, I got out of the car. Are you all right? She didn't respond. Nicky? Up close, she looked like she might be on her last legs.
I need a lift, she gasped. Been on my feet for hours.
I helped her into the car. Her clothes were soaked with sweat. Where on earth have you been, Nicky? What have you been doing?
Walking, she wheezed, up by the ward's cottage, listening to the river.
You do realize that the river runs right past your own front door, don't you? She shook her head.
Not the same river. You think it's all the same, but it changes. It has a different spirit up there. Sometimes you need to travel to hear its voice.
I turned left just before the bridge towards the square. Up here, yes? She nodded, still gulping for air. Perhaps you should get someone to give you a lift next time you feel like travelling. She leaned back in the seat and closed her eyes.
You volunteering? I didn't imagine you'd be sticking around.
We sat in the car for a bit when we reached her flat. I didn't have the heart to make her get out and walk upstairs straight away. So instead I listened while she told me why I should stay in Beckford, why it would be good for Lena to stay by the water, why I'd never hear my sister's voice if I left. I don't believe in all that stuff, Nicky, I said.
Of course you do, she said crossly.
Okay. I wasn't going to argue. So, you were up by the ward's cottage. That's the place where Erin Morgan is staying, right? You didn't see her, did you?
I did. She'd been out running around somewhere. Then she was running off somewhere else. Probably to bark up the wrong tree. Banging on about Helen Townsend. When I told her it wasn't Helen she should be bothering with. No one listens to me. Lauren, I said, not Helen. But no one ever listens.
She gave me the Townsend's address. the address, and a warning.
If the old man thinks you'll know something, he'll hurt you. You've got to be smart.
I didn't tell her about the bracelet, or that it was she, not Erin, who was barking up the wrong tree.
Erin. Helen kept looking up at the window as though she was expecting someone to appear. You're expecting Sean back, are you? I asked her. She shook her head.
No? Why would he be coming back? He's in Newcastle, talking to the brass about the Henderson mess. Surely you knew that.
He didn't tell me, I said. It must have slipped his mind. She raised her eyebrows in an expression of disbelief.
He can be absent-minded, can't he?
I went on. Her eyebrows rose further still.
I mean, not that it affects his work or anything, but sometimes... Do stop talking, she snapped.
She was impossible to read, veering from polite to exasperated, timid to aggressive, angry one minute and frightened the next. It was making me very nervous. This small, mousy, unimpressive woman sitting opposite me was frightening me because I had no idea what she was going to do next. Offer me another cuppa or come at me with the knife. She pushed her chair back suddenly, its feet screeching against the tiles, got to her feet and went to the window. He's been gone ages, she said quietly. Who has? Patrick. She ignored me. He walks in the mornings, but not usually for so long. He's not well, I... Do you want to go and look for him? I asked. I could come with you, if you like. He goes up to that cottage almost every day, she said, talking as though I wasn't there, as though she couldn't hear me. I don't know why. That's where Sean used to take her. That's where they...
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I'm not even sure what the right thing is anymore.
She'd balled her right hand into a fist, a red bloom blossoming on her pristine white bandage.
I was so happy when Nell Abbott died, she said. We all were. It was such a relief. But short-lived. Short-lived. Because now I can't help wondering if it's caused us even more trouble.
She turned, finally, to look at me.
Why are you here? And please don't lie, because I'm not in the mood today.
She raised her hand to her face, and as she wiped her mouth, bright blood smeared over her lips. I reached into my pocket for my phone and pulled it out. I think maybe it's time I left, I said, getting slowly to my feet. I came here to talk to Sean, but since he's not here...
He isn't absent-minded, you know.
She said, taking a step to her left so that she stood between me and the passage to the front door.
He has absences, but that's a different thing.
No.
If he didn't tell you he was going to Newcastle, that's because he doesn't trust you. And if he doesn't trust you, I'm not sure that I should. I'm only going to ask once more, she said. Why you are here?
I nodded, making a conscious effort to drop my shoulders, to stay relaxed. As I said, I wanted to speak to Sean.
About? About an allegation of improper conduct, I said. About his relationship with Nell Abbott.
Helen stepped towards me, and I felt a sickeningly sharp kick of adrenaline to my gut.
There will be consequences, won't there?
She said, a sad smile on her face.
How could we have imagined that there wouldn't be?
Helen, I said, I just need to know.
I heard the front door slam and stepped back quickly, putting some space between us, as Patrick entered the room. For a moment, none of us said anything. He stared at me, eyes on mine, jaw working, while he took off his jacket and slung it over the back of a chair. Then he turned his attention to Helen. He noticed her bloody hand and was immediately animated.
"What happened? Did she do something to you, darling?"
Helen blushed, and something in the pit of my stomach squirmed. "It's nothing," she said quickly. "It's nothing. It wasn't her. My hand slipped when I was chopping onions."
Patrick looked at her other hand, at the knife she still held. Gently, he took it from her.
"What's she doing here?"
he asked, without looking at me. Helen cocked her head to one side, looking from her father-in-law to me and back again.
"She's been asking questions," she said. "About Nell Abbott."
She swallowed.
"About Sean. About his professional conduct."
"I just need to clarify something. It's procedural, relating to the handling of the investigation." Patrick didn't seem interested. He sat down at the kitchen table without looking at me.
"Do you know,"
he said to Helen,
"why they moved her up here?" "I asked around. I still know people, of course. And I spoke to one of my former colleagues down in London, and he told me that this fine detective here was removed from her post in the Met because she'd seduced a younger colleague. And not just any colleague. A woman. Can you imagine that?"
His dry laugh segued into a hacking smoker's cough.
"Here she is, chasing down your Mr. Henderson, while she's guilty of exactly the same thing. An abuse of power for her own sexual gratification. And she still has a job."
He lit a cigarette.
"And then she comes here and says she wants to talk about my son's professional conduct."
Finally, he looked at me.
"You should have been thrown off the force altogether. But because you're a woman, because you're a dyke, you're allowed to get away with it. That's what they call equality."
He scoffed.
"Can you imagine what would happen if it were a man? If Sean got caught sleeping with one of his juniors, he'd be out on his ear."
I balled my hands into fists to stop them shaking.
"How about if Sean was sleeping with a woman who ended up dead?" I asked. "What do you think would happen to him then?"
He moves quickly for an old guy. He was on his feet, chair crashing back, and his hand around my throat in what seemed like less than a second.
"Watch your mouth, you dirty bitch,"
he whispered, breathing sour smoke in my face. I gave him a good hard shove in the chest and he let me go. He stepped back, his arms by his sides, fists clenched.
"My son has done nothing wrong,"
he said quietly.
"So if you make trouble for him, girlie, I'll make trouble for you. Do you understand that? You'll get it back with interest."
"Dad,"
Helen said,
"that's enough. You're scaring her."
He turned to his daughter-in-law with a smile.
"I know, love. I mean to."
He looked back at me and smiled again.
"With some of them, it's the only thing they understand."
Jules. I left the car on the side of the track leading to the Townsend's place. I didn't need to, There was plenty of space to park in their courtyard, but it felt right that I should. This felt like it ought to be a furtive mission, like I ought to surprise them. The fearless relic, the one who appeared the day I confronted my rapist, was back. The bracelet in my pocket, I strode into that sun-drenched courtyard, straight-backed and resolute. I had come on behalf of my sister, to make things right for her. I was determined. I was unafraid. I was unafraid until Patrick Townsend opened the door to me, his face stained with rage, a knife in his hand.
"What do you want?"
he demanded. I took a couple of steps away from the front door. He was about to slam the door in my face, and I was too frightened to say what I needed to.
"He did for his wife," Nicky had told me, "and for your sister too."
I was... "Jules?" a voice called out to me. "Is that you?"
It was quite a scene. Helen was there, with blood on her hand and her face, and Erin too, doing a poor job of pretending that she was in control of the situation. She greeted me with a cheery smile.
"What brings you here? We're supposed to be meeting at the station."
"Yes, I know, I..."
"Spit it out," Patrick muttered.
My skin prickled with heat, breath shortening.
"You Abbots! Christ, what a family!"
His voice rose as he slammed the knife down on the kitchen table.
"I remember you, you know. A beast, weren't you, when you were younger?"
He turned to speak to Helen.
"Disgusting fat thing she was. And her parents, pathetic."
My hands were trembling as he turned back to look at me.
"I suppose the mother had an excuse, because she was dying. But someone should have taken them in hand. You ran wild, didn't you? You and your sister. And look how well you both turned out. She was mentally unstable. And you, well, what are you? Simple?"
"That's quite enough, Mr. Townsend," Erin said.
She took my arm.
"Come on, let's get you to the station. We need to get Lena's statement."
"Ah, yes, the girl. That one will go the same way as her mother. She's got the same dirty look about her. Filthy mouth. The kind of face you want to slap."
"You spend a lot of time thinking about doing things to my teenage niece, do you?" I said loudly. "Do you think that's appropriate?"
My anger was roused again, and Patrick wasn't ready for it.
"Well, do you? Disgusting old man."
I turned to Erin.
"I'm actually not quite ready to leave yet," I said. "But I'm glad you're here, Erin. I think it's appropriate, because the reason I came was not to speak to him,"
I jerked my head in Patrick's direction,
"but to her. To you, Mrs. Townsend."
My hand trembling, I fished the little plastic bag out of my pocket and placed it on the table next to the knife.
"I wanted to ask you, when did you take this bracelet from my sister's wrist?"
Helen's eyes widened, and I knew that she was guilty.
"Where did the bracelet come from, Jules?" Erin asked.
"From Lena, who got it from Mark Henderson, who took it from Helen.
Who, I'm guessing from the guilty as sin look on her face, took it from my sister before she killed her."
Patrick started laughing, a loud fake bark of a laugh.
"She took it from Lena, who took it from Mark, who took it from Helen, who took it from the fairy on the fucking Christmas tree. Sorry, love," he apologised to Helen. "Excuse my French, but what utter garbage."
"It was in your office, wasn't it, Helen?"
I looked at Erin.
"It'll have prints on it, DNA, won't it?"
Patrick chuckled again, but Helen looked stricken.
"No, I..."
she said at last, her eyes flicking from me to Erin to her father-in-law.
"It was... no."
She took a deep breath.
"I found it," she said, "but I didn't know. I didn't know it was hers. I kept it. I was going to hand it in to Lost Property."
"You found it where, Helen?" Erin asked.
"You found it at the school?"
Helen glanced at Patrick, and then back to the detective, as though considering whether the lie would hold. I think that I... Yes, I did. And, I didn't know whose it was, so... My sister wore that bracelet all the time, I said. It has my mother's initials on it. I'm finding it a bit hard to believe you didn't realize what it was, that it was important. I didn't, Helen said, but her voice was thin and her face was reddening.
Of course she didn't know, Patrick shouted suddenly. Of course she didn't know whose it was or where it came from.
He went quickly to her side, placing his hand on her shoulder.
Helen had the bracelet because I left it in her car. Careless of me. I was going to throw it out. I meant to, but I've become rather forgetful. I've become forgetful, haven't I, darling?
Helen said nothing. She didn't move.
I left it in the car, he said again.
Okay, Erin said. And where did you get it? He looked right at me when he answered her.
Where do you think I got it, you moron? I ripped it off that whore's wrist before I threw her over.
Patrick. He had loved her a long time, but never so much as in the moment when she flew to his defense.
That is not what happened. Helen sprang to her feet. That is not... Don't you take the blame for this, Dad. That is not what happened. You didn't even...
Patrick smiled at her, reaching out a hand. She took it and he pulled her closer. She was soft, but not weak. Her modesty, her unashamed plainness, more stirring than any facile beauty. It moved him now. He felt his blood rising, the pump of his weakened old heart. No one spoke. The sister was crying silently, mouthing words without any sound. The detective watched him, watched Helen, something knowing in her face. Are you... She shook her head, lost for words. Mr. Townsend, I...
Come on, then.
He felt suddenly irritable, desperate to get away from the woman's evident distress.
For Christ's sake, you're a police officer. Do what you have to do.
Erin took a deep breath and stepped towards him. Patrick Townsend, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Danielle Abbott. You do not have to say anything.
Yes. All right, he said wearily. I know all that. God! Women like you, you don't ever know when to stop talking.
Then he turned to Helen.
But you, darling, you do. You know when to speak and when to be quiet. You tell the truth, my girl.
She started to cry, and he wanted more than anything to be beside her in the room upstairs, just one last time, before he was taken away from her. He kissed her forehead then, and before he followed the detective out of the door, bid her goodbye. Patrick had never been one for mysticism, for gut feelings or hunches, but if he was honest, he'd felt this coming, the reckoning, the end game. He'd felt it long before they dragged Nell Abbott's cold corpse out of the water, only he dismissed it as a symptom of age. His mind had been playing a lot of tricks lately, boosting the colour and the sound in his old memories, blurring the edges of his new ones. He knew it was the start of it, the long goodbye, that he would be eaten from the inside out, core to husk. He could be grateful, at least, that he still had time to tie up the loose ends, to seize control. It was, he realised now, the only way to salvage something of the life they'd built, though he knew that not everyone could be spared. When they sat him in the interview room at Beckford Station, he thought at first that the humiliation was more than he could bear, but bear it he did. What made it easier, he found, was the surprising sensation of relief. He wanted to tell his story. If it was going to come out, then he should be the one to tell it, while he still had time, while his mind was still his own. More than just relief, there was pride. All his life, there had been a part of him that had wanted to tell what had happened the night Lauren died, but he hadn't been able to. He had held back out of love for his son. He spoke in short, simple sentences. He was very clear. He expressed his intention to make a full confession to the murders of Lauren Slater in 1983 and Danielle Abbott in 2015. Lauren was easier, of course. It was a straightforward tale. They had argued at the house. She had attacked him, and he had defended himself. And in the course of that defense, she had been seriously wounded, too grievously to save. So, in an effort to spare his son the truth, and, he admitted, to spare himself a prison sentence, he drove her to the river, carried her body to the top of the cliff, and threw her, lifeless now, into the water. D.S. Morgan listened politely, but she stopped him there. "Was your son with you at this time, Mr. Townsend?" she asked.
"He didn't see anything," Patrick replied. "He was too little and too frightened to understand what was happening. He didn't see his mother get hurt, and he didn't see her fall."
"He didn't watch you throw her from the cliff?" It took every ounce of his strength not to leap across the table and smack her.
"He didn't see anything. I had to put him in the car because I couldn't leave a 6-year-old alone in the house during a thunderstorm. If you had children, you would understand that. He didn't see anything. He was confused, and so I told him a version of the truth that would make sense to him, that he could make sense of."
"A version of the truth?"
"I told him a story. That's what you do with children, with things they won't be able to understand. I told him a story he could live with, one which would make his life livable. Don't you see that?"
Try as he might, he couldn't stop his voice from rising.
"I wasn't going to leave him alone, was I? His mother was gone, and if I went to prison, what would have happened to him then? What sort of life would he have had? He would have been put in care. I've seen what happens to kids who grow up in care. There's not one of them that doesn't come out damaged and perverted. I have protected him," Patrick said, pride swelling his chest, "all his life."
The story of Nell Abbott was, inevitably, less easy to recount. When he discovered that she had been speaking to Nikki Sage and taking her allegations about Lauren seriously, he became concerned. Not that she would go to the police, no. She wasn't interested in justice or anything like that. She was only interested in sensationalizing her worthless art. What concerned him was that she might say something upsetting to Sean. Once again, he was protecting his son.
"It's what fathers do," he pointed out, "though you might not be aware of that. I'm told yours was a boozer."
He smiled at Erin Morgan, watching her flinch as that punch landed.
"I'm told he had a temper."
He said that he arranged to meet Nell Abbott late one evening to speak about the allegations.
"And she went to meet you at the cliff?"
D.S. Morgan was incredulous. Patrick smiled.
"You never met her. You have no idea of the extent of her vanity, her self-importance. All I had to do was suggest to her that I would take her through exactly what happened between Lauren and me. I would show her how the terrible events of that night unfolded, right there on the spot where they took place. I would tell her the story as it had never been told before. She would be the first to hear it. Then, once I had her up there, it was easy. She'd been drinking. She was unsteady on her feet.
And the bracelet?